Be kind to joy. Laugh a lot. EK. EK. Be kind to joy. Laugh a lot. Cast up, roll things. Little food for your soul, man. Life ain't always pretty, but hey, it's pretty beautiful things. Laugh a little more things. Tighten up your core, man. Said EK, you're kicking it with four things.
With Amy Brown.
So super excited to have Kinsey Todd join me for all four things today. My friend and licensed therapist, Kat DeFatta, introduced me to Kinsey and said, she's going to be amazing. You got to have her on. And I must say, have any of you ever thought of doing therapy with your boyfriend, like pre-engagement counseling? And so, you know, you hear of premarital, but Kinsey definitely has some thoughts on that. She's in a relationship right now where they're about to start that process. But the first thing I'm actually going to get into with Kinsey is leaving a corporate job to follow a dream. Some of you right now might feel stuck in a career and you're scared to really chase after something that you're passionate about. And Kinsey's going to be able to speak to that and give you a little hope there with that. Then the second thing is, what was it like to build this cycle studio that she wanted to, Full Ride Cycle? Now, you may not be in the fitness world, but Kinsey definitely has some advice to offer on the type of environment you want to create at work and being a leader in that environment. The third thing is people pleasing versus making the right decision for you. And then, yeah, we shift gears in the fourth thing and get into relationships and therapy talk. So Kinsey, it's awesome to have you here today. And let's get into what it looked like for you leaving a corporate job and following your dream.
That happened in my later 20s, and I was one of those people that graduated college, and I had no idea what I wanted to do with my life. So I just picked a career, and I actually worked in the music industry in LA for a while and realized LA was not where I wanted to be, moved to Nashville, worked in finance, and just dabbled in a bunch of different things. And I, at one point, had four different jobs because I was like, okay, what do I want to do? And I was working, you know, 80 hours a week to try to figure out what exactly it was that, like, just basically fueled my fire. And it realized that I was put on this earth to teach spin classes. And as crazy as that sounds, it was what I was just thinking about all the time. And I realized at 26, I was like, if I don't do this, if I don't leave this corporate 9-to-5 job, I will always regret it for the rest of my life. So I built up enough of a savings account to be able to really focus on what it was that I wanted. And I just kind of did it, knowing that the fear of not doing it was what was going to haunt me. And I think that that's something that people can always look at of, do I want this corporate 9-to-5? Am I okay with that? Or am I okay with just really going for it? And that's kind of where I focus all of my energy of, like, I'm not going to regret it. I'm too young to do that.
And then did you find yourself doing your corporate job, because that's what you had to do to pay
the bills. Yep.
But then when you got home, you were pouring yourself into your passion.
Exactly. Yes. I'm an early riser. So I would honestly wake up at like 4:30 or 5 in the morning, and I would either teach a class or I would go take a class to learn. And then I'd drive to Franklin and I'd work my corporate job. And then during my lunch break, I would work on my business plan, which is how I ended up starting my own business. I did it while I was still working my corporate job. And then after I was done my 9-to-5, I'd go back to the studio and teach my class and just really figure out, is this what I wanted to do? Because I wanted to make sure it was calculated enough where I was responsible. But at the same time, I did something that just lit me up, and I needed that. I just was somebody that needed to feel fulfilled. And the way that I did that was just to pour into people through fitness. And that was when I realized, okay, I've got to leave this desk job. This is not fulfilling. This is not what God brought me on this earth to do. And so I took the jump, but it was very calculated. I had at least about 3 months under my belt of navigating multiple different jobs. And then I decided, okay, I've got to leave. It's time.
Give me the time frame of when you had this realization and then when you actually implemented it. Because I also want to be realistic for people of, like, is it something that you had manifested in a way? Like, you put it on a vision board or however people do it. I mean, I feel like you waking up at 5 a.m. and then using your lunch break in a way is you creating your vision. You're focusing on it. You're thinking about it. But from when you had the thought that you knew this is what you had to do to when you actually, your last day at your corporate job.
Yes, it was like 8 years, if I'm being fully honest.
Oh, wow.
I was 19, and I'll never forget. I always always, as females, you know, we have relationships with our bodies, but I had a very unhealthy relationship in LA, and I would work out, and I could not figure out a way to enjoy that. And so when I moved to Nashville, I started teaching on the side, like I mentioned, and working my corporate job. But when I was 19, I thought, wow, it'd be so cool to own my own studio one day. It's very like sexy and very, you know, very enticing to want to do that. But then when you get into the nitty gritty of it, you really have to be committed, because you are using your body, and it's very exhausting. And I realized, okay, do I really want to do this? And so for about 8 years, I really just thought through it. I made sure I got a job in fitness, and I still continued to love it. And then it finally hit me when I was 26, and I was working at a local studio in town, and I loved what I did, but I just didn't love the way the business was going and the way the leadership. I just was like, we could do this so much better, is what I kept telling myself. I was like, and I really feel like I could do this better, you know?
Well, that's what we're going to get into in the second thing, is why you built Full Ride the way you did. Mm-hmm. You designed it, and you have certain teachers, and everything's for a certain reason. And I think probably coming from LA, mm-hmm. and maybe being in a certain environment. I have friends that have lived in LA and just moved here and just felt like they could breathe.
Yes.
Because everything there was so much pressure all the time. And there was multiple workout classes a day. Just, you felt like you had to juice all the time. And just the culture there is very suffocating.
So suffocating. And it's very lonely. And that's really what got me into cycling. My girlfriend dragged me to a SoulCycle class. And I was like, I'm not going because I can't afford it. I know I'm going to get hooked on it. And that's exactly what happened. And it was the one thing that I felt kind of like what you talked about, where you connect people and you make people feel like they're not alone. That is what, to me, fitness is, and particularly this style of fitness. And so, yeah, coming from LA, I could breathe in Nashville, and I will never leave. I love it.
And that would probably be my encouragement to anybody. You may not be in LA. You may be here in Nashville. Whatever your environment is, are you able to breathe?
Yes.
Maybe you're listening right now in Texas or DC or in another country. I don't know. But like, look around at your environment, your surroundings, the people you're with, the types of workouts you're doing. Can you breathe? Mm-hmm. And I think that that's just an important thing. To speak to exactly what we're talking about in this thing, your career. Mm-hmm. Are you able to fully be yourself? If you have a certain job and that's what's paying the bills, like, by all means, yes, mm-hmm. keep doing that. But how can you incorporate some of your passions, whether it's like you were doing teaching a couple times a week or doing a Saturday type thing or waking up early and making sure that you're getting that fulfillment somewhere?
Yes, exactly. And one of my things too is like, am I proud of who I'm becoming in this? And that was one of the things that I realized in the corporate world. I was getting so lost and so down and so unsure of who I was. I was not growing into the woman I wanted to be. I was almost retracting from who I really wanted. And I tried so many different things. And the one thing that lit my soul on fire was teaching spin classes. And it didn't make any sense. My dad didn't believe in it at first. My family thought I was crazy, but you really have to have enough faith to know, like, no, this is what I really need to do. And I was 27. I mean, most people figure out what they want to do when they're 18, if you're lucky. But the reality is we don't figure it out till later. And you have to try so many different things, and you don't know until you do. And then when you figure it out, you put your whole heart and soul into it. And I believe that if you work hard enough for anything, you'll get there. You just have to work hard enough and want it bad enough.
Yeah. And some people might be 37, 47, 57.
Yes.
Like it really can come in at different types depending on, you know, the path that life has taken you on and what you're open to. You mentioned before you weren't going to let the fear stop you from doing it. Mm-hmm. And so I think for a lot of us too, fear paralyzes our brain from even going there. Yep. And it doesn't seem attainable. So if you strip that away, mm-hmm. and you just go for it no matter what.
Yep.
Quickly, before we get into the next thing, you mentioned your dad or family. Eventually, once you did decide to do it, did you have a certain support group that you would lean on to take such a leap?
My mom, honestly, has been incredibly supportive. She's just always been the one that's very emotionally sound in the way of, Kenzie, you got to go pursue your dream. So what if you fail? Like, she kept coming back to like, okay, and if it doesn't work, so what? Like, you start over. And I do that Tim Ferriss thing where you kind of play out every worst case scenario. Okay, so you file bankruptcy. That's awful, but is your life over? No. So that is kind of how my family kind of restructured. I think my mom was the biggest one to be like, yeah, go do it. And then my brother, he's also a fellow entrepreneur. He runs his own tech company in LA. And my dad's a big entrepreneur in Canada, and they're very realistic. And so they didn't really believe in fitness, but they're like, if you love it, And if it fails, you know, you'll learn a lot. And that was my mentality. I was like, if it fails, I'll have learned a lot and I'll have a great story and I'll have done something that I'm very proud of. And I just, again, I go back to the, I couldn't not do it. That's what pushed me to go do it was I got to a point in my life where I was like, I can't not do this. I will regret it for the rest of my life if I don't.
Yeah. It's interesting that your mom played a role in helping encourage you in that decision. Because when I took the leap into radio from sales, I was 24 or 25. And I had never done radio before and got an offer to be on a morning show, which is something, a coveted spot that people work years to get to that position. In fact, one of my first days starting the Bobby Bone Show in Austin, I was at the printer and someone at another station, like an older person that had been radio forever, I was at the printer and they're like, oh, are you the new intern over there? And I was like, no, I'm the new co-host. And I was so naive to the fact, now that I'm in it, I know. Well, I got extremely lucky, but I was considering not even doing it because I was scared that I didn't know what I was doing. And why would I leave this amazing sales job that I have to go do something? I took a pay cut, but I was going to get paid to talk, which just seemed unreal to me. But my mom sat me down and was like, look, if there's ever a time to do it, now's the time to do it. You're young. Give it a try. But I would take my mom's advice and then wipe away the age thing. Like, no matter what, if you're feeling it and you're thinking this could be something exciting and cool, even if it is a pay cut, or you are going to get judged for like, who do you think you are? You have no experience doing this. Who cares? Yeah. Like, if you have an opportunity, go for it. Don't let certain fears take over. And now's the time.
Yeah, now's the time. Yeah.
And then too, like it makes me think of that tree analogy, and I may butcher it because I'm just going to say it, but I mean, the time to plant a tree was yesterday or 10 years ago or whatever,
like
because
planting the seed
because like you're going to constantly look back and be like, oh man, I should have just done it then because then my tree would be growing.
Yep. Exactly.
And instead I put it off. All right. Well, next thing, let's get into what Full Ride Cycle is all about and what that means to you.
Second thing.
So Kat was so excited when she auditioned. Is that the word?
Yes, auditioned is the word.
To be an instructor at a Full Ride Cycle. And being that she's a therapist and done a lot of work on herself and obviously has a lot of clients, like it's important for her to be at a place that's like amazing. She doesn't want to be in an environment that's toxic in any way, which some workout spaces can be that way. So why did you design Full Cycle? I know a lot of people listening, they might not be here in Nashville, so they won't have the opportunity to go down to the 12 South area where y'all are. But if you're ever visiting, a lot of people come here for trips. Or if you do live here, I would encourage y'all to check it out. But also wherever you live, find a place like this that Kinsey's about to explain to you, because I already know a little bit from Kat and I'm going to come check it out soon. But tell us why it was important to lay out Full Ride the way you did.
Well, so Full Ride for me was, you spend the most amount of time with the people that you work with. And so I really want to make sure that I'm constantly surrounded by people who are just better than me, faster than me, smarter than me, all those things. And when I started Full Ride, I had a few things that I just were non-negotiables. One of them is gossip. I actually have fired somebody because of gossip. I really want people to have high integrity, because if you're going to be on the microphone and teaching a class on a Saturday morning and having a full room of ears and you're telling them to work harder and, you know, believe in yourself and go after the things that you want, you have to be able to represent that off the bike as well. And so I think the reason that Full Ride has been so successful is that I have an army behind me of just upstanding people. And I think that's what's drawn Kat in, who is one of those people who wants to better those lives around her. And she's one of those ones that I've had my eye on. She doesn't even know this, but I've had my eye on her for years and I've taken her class before. But I really believe that you attract the kind of people that you want. And so I wanted to build that because I never had that. You kind of learn, like when you date somebody, like, oh, I realize I don't like this about that person, or I don't like this quality. I've tried to take everything that I've learned in my jobs, and especially at the studio that I previously worked at, and try to kind of do what I didn't like and try to implement a really safe place for people to love. Because at the end of the day, we're working out and we're trying to better our clients' lives. And if we can't do that behind the scenes, we're going to fail within 6 months.
Yeah. So whenever you have to approach someone, I'm just trying to think of, like, again, back to environment. When you have a firm, hey, no gossip rule, and that's probably just one example, there might be other things. Yep. What is it like as being the one in charge now that has to enforce that environment? I'm sure at some point it's like, yeah, we're just not going to tolerate that. Maybe there's grace in the beginning, but like, hey, heads up, we're not about that. I'm just thinking too, for other people that are building a brand or building a business or managing people. I'm just trying to think of like, if I was in that position and someone gossiped and then I'm like, you know, okay, is it one strike you're out? Is it like three or what?
It's a great question. And I think the number one thing I try to do is lead by example. Now I am human and I'm imperfect, but I really try to make sure that I'm never speaking poorly about people in front of my team. I have 32 people on the team now and they range from like 20 all the way up to like 30. I think we're like 34, 35 years old. So I am not the youngest on the team, but I am, you know, one of the oldest, and I feel like it's my due diligence to be somewhat of a mentor to these younger girls who are working the front desk. But also they just know, because when they start, I'm very clear with, here's our core values as a team and as a brand. Here's my personal core values. And I hope that yours align with us, because if they don't, you're not going to feel comfortable here. And we do a ton of recruitment and we really do some almost like not background checks, but in a way just kind of, I call references, I stalk their social media. I just kind of see who they're about to see that if they're going to be in line with our brand. Because at the end of the day, if they don't like it here, they're going to infuse a very toxic kind of culture, even if they're not saying bad things about us or about other people. So I really try to just be one, that influence and be that example. And then two, I will tend to pull people aside and say, hey, you know, you're new here, or maybe I wasn't clear on the expectation and that's on me. You know, always trying to take accountability as a leader to be like, I'm sorry, I didn't explain this very well to you, but this is how we do it here. So just going forward. And I go by, you know, compliments go down and complaints go up. So I always try to compliment my team, make sure it's very light and positive. And then if they have anything that they want to talk to me about, if somebody said something or a client or whatever, they always have a safe place with me to bring that. That to me isn't considered gossip, because, you know, you got to do something about certain situations. But for the most part, we try to be an example and we hold each other accountable. We say, hey, you know what? We don't talk like that. And we're like, oh, you're right. You're right. Thank you. Thank you for keeping me in check. And again, we just try to make each other better. And at the end of the day, that's what we want, because that's who we spend the most amount of time with, is the people that we work with. So I feel so blessed to have these incredible people that also keep me in line with who I am and where I want to go and where I want the brand to go as well. I refer to it again as just my army of people that do this with me. I don't ever feel like I'm the boss. I just kind of feel like I work with all of my favorite people.
You mentioned Tim Ferriss earlier. So is there any other people that you look to or have read their books or probably in leadership and business that you pull from?
Yes. Well, so I used to work at Ramsey Solutions down in Franklin. I know it can be like a tough subject there, but I did learn so much from a leader that I looked up to so intensely. His name was Daniel Tardy. He was actually my direct leader down there with Entree Leadership. I also am a huge fan of Tim Keller and Gary Thomas, just a lot of like more biblical based teachings that I really try to implement in my studio, because I'm just a huge believer that at the end of the day, I can do everything I can to infiltrate a positive culture and try to keep my business alive during a global pandemic. But at the end of the day, as a believer, it comes down to Jesus. So I really try to focus a lot on biblical teachings that I bring into the studio. You don't have to have faith to work there. That's not at all what I'm saying. But that is kind of where I put a lot of my outside focus into, to try to infiltrate that kind of positivity within the studio.
I love that. And I think that, you know, when I first asked you the question, even though it was like gossip was the example, and you were like, oh, that's a good question. And then you gave the answer. And I was thinking the whole time, I was like, yeah, no, but that's a really good answer.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of people, again, that may have to manage a group, mm-hmm. whether it's a team of one that works alongside you or a team of 30 or 40, management can be so tricky.
It's so hard.
A non-toxic environment can be a whole job in itself. Mm-hmm. And so when you're also trying to do other day-to-day tasks that you have to do to keep your business growing and flowing, and props to you.
Thank you.
The whole time you were answering, I was like, wow. And then say your age again.
I'm 30.
30.
Yeah.
Very mature.
Very sweet.
For your age. I'm 39, but I'm even trying to think of where I was business-wise in my head at 30. So
you should talk to my family. They're like, you're losing it. And I'm like, yeah, most of the time I'm losing it. But yeah, I try to keep it together. But
here we go. So when it comes to people pleasing versus making the right decision for you, I feel like so many of us fall into that category of like, I want everybody to like me. I don't want anybody to be mad at me. But when you're a leader, mm-hmm. you kind of have to make some tough calls sometimes. So what has that looked like for you growing into your position and not being such a people pleaser?
That's such a great question. Well, honestly, up until like 29 years old, which was last summer, I realized I have been a people pleaser. And I think that's very natural for humans to care about what people think about you, but I really would take it to heart. I'm a 2 on the Enneagram and I'm an empath. So I feel everybody's emotions and I really take into account how people are going to receive what I do and the decisions I make. And I realize running a business means you have to go against the grain and you have to make wise decisions even when it's hard and even when people can't see what you can see. And I felt that a lot too, because we actually started our studio in a portable shipping container 2 years ago, and it was a proof of concept. It was cash funded by my savings account, and I could charge a certain price for that studio and for that ride. And when we moved over just recently, 2 months ago, to a brand new studio that's 2,000 square feet in the heart of 12 South, my expenses go up. So of course my prices have to go up, and I received a ton of backlash from my loyal riders about that. And it killed me. Like it really felt debilitating. And I realized, again, you have to go back to, I want to have a studio in 4 years, in 5 years. I want to still be around. So I have to make these decisions and people aren't going to like me for them, but you have to just know your truth. And I always kind of advise having a state of your personal core values. And one of them for me has always been making wise decisions, even when it's hard, and realizing what your goal is, what your focus is, and just continuing to stay in line with who you are, and knowing that at the end of the day, it's your business. You're the one that's responsible. You're the one that has to keep it floating.
Right. And then even as a business owner, you know, or I'll just speak to leaders in general, you know that if it fails, it's going to mm-hmm. fall back on you, and that's fine. But you're the one that's going to make the decision.
Yes.
Not anybody else. Exactly. But failing is okay,
it's okay.
Because
yeah.
you learn and you grow from it.
Oh, yeah. And I'm a big believer too. If you can be, as a leader, the more transparent you are, the more you're going to have buy-in from your team. So if I'm making a decision, I want my team to also feel involved in that decision, even if I'm still going to go the way that I want to and I have adversity there. I'll call a team meeting, especially with my instructors, because they also are part of the product, right? And they have their face on the schedule, and they're basically representing me, but also they're representing the entire team. And so if I say, hey guys, I'm thinking about this and this is why we're doing it, giving transparency and letting your team see behind the why allows for them to kind of be more bought in on the brand, and they get this sense of ownership, you know? And so as a leader, you're trying to say, hey, this is where we're going. This is what I want. What do you think? And when they can have buy-in, they're just more invested in you. They're going to work harder. They're going to be more believable. And so I'm just a huge believer in being as human as possible. And my team knows all about me. I walk in, I want to know how you're doing, how your heart's doing. I had one of my girls call me last week. She's having boy problems. I say, hey, I've got 10 minutes. Let's talk about this. You know, just making sure that people know that at the end of the day, I care about their hearts more than I care about dollar signs. And so when they know that and they know my intentions, they're going to work twice as hard for me. And then we're going to be on this, I call it a crusade. And so we're on this crusade together, trying to change people's lives through fitness. We're not trying to cure cancer, but we're doing it together. And I think if you can be as transparent as possible as a leader, to the extent that they need to know certain things, you're going to have a more bought-in team, and you're going to be a tighter as a group.
And then when it comes to the instructors, let's say we are there taking a class mm-hmm. and y'all are on this crusade, you
yes.
say. So give me an example of what it might be like if I'm there riding my bike and you're empowering me along
yes.
the way.
Oh, gosh.
Like
okay.
what? I mean,
yes.
you don't have to like yell yes. at me through the mic,
yes.
but I don't know. I'm trying to envision what it'd be like to be on a ride there right now, and why it was so important to you to create this environment. Because yeah, other people have done this before.
Oh, yeah.
It's not like
yeah.
you're the first spin
no.
studio.
No.
But Kat has just said, there's just something different and everybody's welcome and
yeah.
there's no pressure and
yeah.
you just show up as you are.
Yep.
And so let's say we are there. Like, I don't know. Do you even get to teach that much anymore?
I do. I teach too much. I can't wait for the day
oh,
when I don't
okay.
have to teach so much. I love it. I love it. But my body is just starting to break down. I teach a lot. But I
like, how do you speak into your riders?
Yeah. So I always tell people, I try to teach a class like I would want to take it. And I have a very soulful kind of style. I actually teach a Sunday service class on Sundays and I play worship music. But I definitely believe in making people feel something. One of my kind of things that I've realized over years and years of therapy is I numb myself out when I am going through hard times. I kind of go in the survival mode. So when I'm on the bike, I want to feel my feelings. I want to feel if I'm tired or if I'm angry or if I'm frustrated. So I will teach a class based on that. And it will be, you'll walk in, my front desk staff, they'll be like, oh my gosh, they already know your name because they looked you up on the bike map. And they just want to make you feel as welcome as possible because fitness is intimidating. I mean, I own my own studio and I walk into a studio and I'm still nervous. And so we want to make sure that everybody feels very, very welcome. Clip into your bike and it's 45 minutes and it's just this very therapeutic experience. And some instructors are like, you're going to the club. Some instructors are like, I'm going to church, you know, whatever your style is. But it's really an experience that gets you out of your head and more connected into your heart. And I really believe it is what cured me from a very unhealthy relationship with my body, anxiety, depression, just being able to get on the bike, work really, really hard and feel connected to all these other people in this room doing the exact same thing that I'm doing and probably feeling very similar feelings as to what I'm feeling. And again, it goes back to just not feeling alone and knowing like we're in this again crusade together, and the instructor is somebody that I can look up to and that I can believe in, and whatever they say, they mean it. And I think that is what makes us so different than anybody else in Nashville, and honestly anyone else in the US. Not to sound, you know, I really think I have the best team in the US, and our slogan has been hearts beat better together. And I just believe that if you want to go fast, that saying go alone, but if you want to go far, go together. And so that's kind of what we try to do when you are in the bike room taking a class.
Well, I love that you believe in your studio that much to say, yes, we're the best in the world. Yes, yes. And I feel that's encouragement to anybody else listening. Whatever you're doing, you're the best at it.
Mm-hmm.
And like chase that and believe that and don't let anybody else tell you otherwise. I mean, stay humble.
Yes,
but
yes,
you know what yes, I mean? Like be your biggest cheerleader. When I think a lot of us sometimes are our biggest critic error, we doubt ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so let's flip that script. So I love that you said that as a reminder that it's okay to believe in your team and all that is possible.
You have to, mm-hmm. And I have a laundry list of all the things that I know I am so not good at. And I have a mentor that actually told me we focus so much on our weaknesses instead of actually figuring out what our strengths are. And so I know my strengths, they're not very many, but I want to focus more on those in this year in 2021. In 2020, I just was on pure survival. And probably for the last 29 years, I've been focusing on all my weaknesses. And this year, I'm really trying to shift that mindset of like, okay, I know I'm a good instructor. I know I'm a good leader. I'm not very strategic. I'm not good at finances. I'm not very good at balancing the P&L sheet, but I know how to lead a team and I know how to teach a good spin class. So that's kind of where I try to focus. So that's my encouragement to you guys who are listening is like, instead of just thinking about all the things that you need to do better, focus on the things that you actually do really, really well and just get better at those things.
Yeah. And make sure when the time is right, if you can bring somebody else along, that's their strength, then let them delegate and then you focus on what you're good at. And now I know for sure too why Kat loves it, because you said feel your feelings.
Yes.
That's part of her You Need Therapy merch. Yes. Like she gave me a t-shirt and it says feel your feelings. So love that. Four things with Amy Brown. So you're 30 and an entrepreneur and chased your dream and now you're living it out and you have a boyfriend.
I do, yes.
But you're not married yet, which here in the South, that is definitely like, well, why aren't you married? Yep. Or why don't you have kids yet?
Yep.
Or, well, what's the deal? When are you going to get married? When are you going to have kids? Yep. And so you came from a childhood of divorce. I don't know what other relationships looked like for you, but we'll kind of like cover relationships in this thing.
Okay, great.
And what that looks like. And then also expectations of relationships being a 30-year-old woman in today's society. Or what, I mean, in different parts of the country, it really is so different.
It is.
But there is that certain pockets, there is for sure pressure to at a certain age to have done X, Y, and Z.
Yes.
So what has that looked like for you?
So I actually most definitely grew up I was super focused on athletics and academics. And then I didn't really date until my like mid-20s. And I learned some really hard lessons. I dated the guy who I was trying to fix. I dated the guy who was emotionally unavailable. And it wasn't until I met Michael, who I've been with for 3.5 years now, that I realized that relationships are about just dating your very best friend. And I didn't have that growing up. My parents are wonderful people. I love them dearly. They're better parents separate than they ever were together. together because they weren't friends. And so feeling that pressure in a way at 30, Michael's 36. So we have some age differences, but we also are working through our own, not trauma to be dramatic. Michael was adopted at 7 and he was born in Madrid and raised in Iraq, and he's Iranian. So he moved over to the US when he was, I think, about 4, and then bounced around in foster care until he was about 7. And so he has his story and I have mine, and we're, you know, working through that together as a couple, and we're in no rush. He's very career driven. I'm very career driven. So,
and to be clear, I'm going to stop you real quick to talk about trauma, because it was almost like you were like, I don't want to be dramatic, but you going through a divorce as a child, your parents splitting up, and his background with adoption and foster care, 100% you both experienced trauma.
Yeah.
Like, there's no doubt about that. And I think the more we talk about that kind of thing, and there's big T and little T, which
totally.
Shout out Kat for breaking that down for me. But you have big traumas in your life and you have little ones, and they impact all of your relationships.
Yeah.
So many interactions that you have in a day could be based on certain things that happened to you in the past, or little triggers that you have in a friendship, in a romantic relationship, in a business relationship. You can be triggered at any time. But I just wanted to say, valid trauma.
Yes.
And everybody's trauma looks different. But for sure, when you're entering into a relationship, and I'm thankful to hear you say that, because it's good that y'all are wanting to do that work now before things even get more serious, even though 3.5 years is is pretty serious for sure.
Yeah. We both just don't want to get divorced, and I come from it, and his parents are still together, but we just want to make sure that we do our job. My mom always said, you earn your marriage and you earn your divorce, and you work through both sides of that fence wherever your life lays. And so with Michael and I, we actually just started kind of pre-engagement counseling, I guess you could say, or just kind of working through some couples therapy together, because after starting this business, I've had some health issues and I'm exhausted all the time and we don't get a ton of time together. And he's very driven. He's in sales and he's in, you know, trying to strive in his career. And so we're trying to figure out, how do we make sure that we give our kids the best life? If it is us at the end of the day and we do get married, how do we make sure that I become the most amazing mom that I can be, and he becomes the most amazing dad that he can be? And I think not really having an example has really led us to really strive to figure out what that will look like. And so we want to do that on the front end before we make any big jump. And again, at 30, I get the question, when are you, Michael, getting married? When are you, Michael, getting married? And I'm just like, well, we're not ready yet. And we're working towards it. We love each other deeply. He's my best friend. And he's 36 and he's getting the pressure like crazy because all his friends have little ones running around. But again, he's not in any rush. And I think that gives us so much comfort in knowing that, like, we love each other, we're committed, but we want to do the work prior to, so that on the day, if God gives us that, we are so confident in that, and that right timing will be according to his will for sure.
Oh, I think that's some wisdom right there for people just in relationships. You don't hear too much about counseling in the dating space or couples therapy, I guess I should say, which y'all are about to start pre-engagement therapy, which would be you and him as boyfriend, girlfriend, going to a couples therapy session.
Or and multiple. It was not easy getting him to commit to that for sure. I mean, he does his own therapy and I've kind of been the driver, but he's like, yeah, let's do this. Because we both, at the end of the day, like, 2020 put so much into perspective for us of, like, we were spending every day together and my business was shut down and I was a wreck and he was trying to survive as well. And so we were just like, wow, we really love everyday life with each other every day, all of 2020. And so now it's kind of like, okay, what are our barriers now? Where do we want to be at the end of this year? And I think being able to have guidance and just being humble enough to say, we need help. Like, we want to make sure that we make the right decision. And so we just want that expert. And I'm a huge believer in therapy. I've been in therapy since I was like 20 years old. So
what do you think first took you there?
My parents' divorce.
At what age were you when they got divorced?
So I was 18 when my mom filed, but it was a 4-year long battle. And so I think I was about 22 when it finally settled, but I was living in California going to school, and I just had a very different college experience. I went to Pepperdine, which is in Malibu, and everybody is like, oh my gosh, you went to the coolest school ever.
Yes.
And I was like, yes. It was also rated the number one loneliest campus in the United States. And I graduated in 3 years because I just wanted to get out. And I think it was a lot to do with my parents' divorce. And I remember, I think I was a freshman in college, and I was like, I need help. And then by sophomore year, I found a therapist who, he changed my life, and I would drive. I think I saw him sometimes twice a week because I just needed somebody to guide me out of this really unhealthy pattern that I got myself in as a kid. And I found identity in my parents' divorce. And I didn't know who I was at 22, because when the divorce was finally over, I was like, who am I? And what do I want? And where am I going?
Well, I love that you were able to recognize early on and that you had the access to therapy. I feel like so many people, yeah, we do need it, but you, especially at a young age, maybe don't have the resources to do that. So I'm glad that you did. And now you can use your experience and you take it to the bike.
Now at 30 years old,
yes. that therapy, I'm sure that you got back then, mm-hmm. shows up with you now. And, you know, if you're listening right now, we talk about therapy on the podcast a lot. It just comes up, especially because I just finished that book. I feel like a broken record because I talk about this book like every episode now, but I just loved it. Was You Need Therapy?
Oh, I loved it. I read that. Yep.
Yes.
It's so good.
It's so, so good. And, you know, maybe if you're looking to dip your toe into what therapy might look like, grab that book. Mm-hmm. It's written by a therapist, and she's going to actually, we have the date that she's going to be on. I'm going to interview her for the podcast, but awesome. I think it'll be towards the end of February. We were comparing calendars and we finally got a date booked. So I'm excited about that. But then Kat, who introduced us, she also has a podcast, You Need Therapy. And I talk about that being a resource. Like, it's not going to replace therapy, but let's say therapy is not possible for you mm-hmm. right now. Maybe that's an option, or certain books yes. might be an option, yes. or just are looking into other podcasts that might pertain to whatever it is that was your trauma. Yes. What, is it a childhood divorce? Are you in an abusive relationship? Are you stuck in a job and you don't understand why? Do you have an eating disorder? Other body image issues? Like, whatever it is, like, as dangerous as the internet is at times, or like as frustrated as we get with Instagram or social media and how toxic, speaking of toxic, that can be, it also was, gosh, it's right at our fingertips. Yeah. So many resources. And I've met so many amazing people from social media. Yeah. I mean, Mary, one of my best friends and my business partner, met her on Twitter. Shout out, she also went to Pepperdine.
Wow.
So you referenced that as being one of the loneliest campuses on, what, in a poll?
Yeah, that it was like a study back when I was in school, and I actually almost transferred out of Pepperdine. I'm glad I didn't, because I ended up rushing a sorority. But I think part of it is because 80% of their students are in Greek life. And so if you're not in Greek life, you can feel very isolated. And it's in Malibu, so it's just it's a different part of the world, you know? Like, Malibu's just this little cocoon, and it's beautiful. And you get to go to school on the beach, essentially. But if you don't have a strong community, which I think everything just comes back to who you're around, it can feel very isolating. And I did experience that. But I also was going through a lot at the time. So it was just a different kind of experience for me. But for a lot of people that went, they loved it. I just had a very different college experience.
Well, that's almost an example of like anywhere people are. If you don't have your people or your community, things can be very... Yeah. lonely and isolating.
Yeah.
So yeah, well, thank you for sharing some of your therapy experience with us. And then even props to you and your boyfriend going to pre-engagement therapy.
Sounds crazy.
I love it. Actually, in the middle of us recording the segment, we had to press pause because Bobby FaceTimed me and he is about to get married to Caitlin. And I think now Caitlin heard me in the background say pre-engagement therapy. And I know that's, he was like, oh, interesting. Sounds interesting. But I know she's going to probably be like, wait a second, we're already engaged. Yeah. Maybe we need to go to premarital counseling.
Yes.
Which is oftentimes what people do. But yeah, I just think that there's so much that can come out that can be beneficial in therapy. But also, in case you have some weird thing, or your family does, or maybe whoever you're dating does, they have a stigma. Like, mm-hmm. I can never do that. Mm-hmm. Gosh, you're just given so many tools. Yeah. That you can use in relationships that can help you. Maybe it's not even a romantic relationship. It could be in friendships, or again, in business relationships. So I just appreciate you talking with us today about so much.
Of course.
Before we wrap up fully, I would love for you to share four things that you are thankful for.
I am thankful for my incredible supportive family. I would be lost without them. I am thankful for my team. Again, I would be lost without them. I'm thankful for the ability to move my body. And I'm just thankful to be able to be here today with you. I feel so honored and way out of my league to be here. But just thank you, Amy, so much for being so wonderful and letting me share some of my little life with you.
Well, thank you for being here. And where can we find Full Ride on Instagram or even you? Do you do your account and that one?
Yes. So I am Kenzie Todd and then Full Ride, it's Full Ride Cycling. And we have a studio right in 12 South. We're right off 10th Avenue in Nashville. We've been around for a couple years and we're going to keep going. So
love that and appreciate you sharing your gratitude with us, the four things you're thankful for. And I'll just close out with a quick reminder that we are going to do our gratitude challenge coming up in the month of March. We did it last year. And it's just every day trying to write down and be intentional about taking note of four things that you are thankful for. And you could do it in any journal that you want or any old notebook that you have, or we do have our four things gratitude journal that is super cute, that has inspirational quotes and stickers and recipes even in the back and prompts for days that you're kind of struggling. And it's, yeah, I think I already said it's super cute because Mary and I designed it, but it also supports Project MetaShare in Haiti and education there and the work that they're doing. So radioamy.com if you want to have access to that. All right. Thank you, Kenzie. And I will be taking a full ride class soon.
Yes.
Of cats.
I can't wait.
I told her I'd show up on a Saturday one day. So I'll be there.